The views and comments expressed on the Space Show callers and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we
because
have
they
main
are
engine
hard.
Start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Tuesday evening Space Show program. Great to be here. And we have a great program, and I want to jump right to it. But first, a couple of announcements, and I'll introduce our guest. For those of you who would like to call and participate in our program tonight and talk to our two guests, Rand Sinberg and Bill Simon, that toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. For those of you using email, it is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And let's see, please do visit our website, which is thespaceshow.com. And there is a comprehensive detailed newsletter that's uploaded Sunday evening. And it has all of the details about the week's programming guest bio. And it's the only place where we have the future events for the Space Show listed. And so to stay current, since we do change the schedule from time to time, check it out. And that way you'll see if anything has changed, because if we do have to modify our programs during the week, you see it first on that website newsletter. You can also subscribe to the very short email newsletter there. It goes out early Monday morning, and it's just one or two lines about the show's week. Just send me your email address, and we'll enter you into it. Everything we do is archived, and you can listen right off of our show, right off of our website, or you can easily download these programs. There is a guest search tool for you to help locate the topics, the keywords, and the guests that you're interested in. It's on the website next to the social media buttons. And there, you can do any kind of a global search you'd like in Word or Excel or a PDF document. For those favorite terms, words, or guests, you'll pick up all the dates where they were mentioned or they were part of a Space Show program. Jot the dates down, and then you can pick up all those shows off of our website search engine. There's a store up near the top of our website. Check it out, please, Space Show Gear. And then, of course, you'll see the Support the Space Show button there. Remember, we're a nonprofit with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org, 501c3. And we do exist because of your support and contributions, and we thank you very much for that. We do podcast, and you can find us in iTunes and Microsoft Zoom and a host of other places on the web as well. If you have any questions about that, email me. Remember, the show is not really a podcast. We just put it out as a podcast. It is a live broadcast on internet radio. We are also brought to you in part by the Secure World Foundation. They do promote cooperative solutions for space security. For more info, you can visit their website, www.swfound.org, and they do sponsor our webinars. We just had one on educational outreach on Sunday. Our next one is on August 18th, Sunday, about NEO. And tonight, we're going to talk to two of the authors of the Evola Terra ceremony. So go to www.evolaterra.com, E-V-O-L-O-T-E-R-R-A. And Rand Sinberg is with us, as well as Bill Simon. We do this pretty much every year. They are among those that created this ceremony. Rand, who all of you know and you heard from just a couple of weeks ago, is back with us. And Bill is currently in high technology business development, and he has played a role in what we're going to talk about first, and that is the book that Rand has written that we hope to see at the New Space Conference. Safety is not an option, as Rand has been very outspoken lately about risk-taking and human spaceflight. Both Rand and Bill have their bios on the website, so you can read about them. and both have been frequent guests on the Space Show. So, Rand and Bill, welcome to the show. And, Rand, how is Safety Is Not an Option coming? I know Bill played a big part in the book as well. And will it be available for us to get autographed copies at New Space?
Answer first, it's safe is not an option, not safety is not an option. That's a common error, and it's completely forgivable, but it's a very, very important thing. I mean, it's like, because it's almost the opposite message if you say safety is not an option.
Absolutely. I fully get that, and I will not transgress again.
You'll be forgiven again. It's because it's very easy to make the miss the distinction.
So is it going to be ready? Or are we going to get autographed copies from you?
I'm about to go to get a proof from the printer, and it's a POD. That is print-on-demand printer. And if we like the proof, we'll print out a bunch more that it will take to the conference at the end of next week. It's a tight schedule.
And the first 1,000 at the conference get the book for free, right? Hello?
No. Yes. An electronic version with every other word missing.
So, Bill, will you by chance be at the conference with the book too? Because this is partially your work as well.
No, I'm not planning on attending the conference. My contribution is really in the editing and illustration and actually the book design itself. So the content is 100% RAND.
Okay.
That's not true. The content,
okay,
the 98% content includes RAND. Editorial.
It included what editorial?
Includes the editor's input. So it's not 100% me. And it's not 100%, I mean, and it's not just Bill. In the acknowledgments, I acknowledge a lot of people who have helped me write this book.
We kind of joked around when I put out the wrong title for your book, but since you were on the show several weeks ago, I have asked a lot of guests about, and I don't own up to doing justice to how you explain it, because I can't. I'm not nearly as good at it as explaining what you're after as you are. Here's what happens when I tell them about your book and sort of the main idea, and I take it off of the website that you introduced to us, which I guess is safeisnotanoption.com, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. They immediately believe, and this leads into the mistake I made inadvertently, and by not paying attention, they immediately believe you are advocating no safety for human spaceflight. That is the immediate knee-jerk response.
Exactly. And I don't know how to get around that except to continually explain it and say, no, we're just explaining reality. There's nothing, there is no activity in your life that you take in which there is not a risk involved. Every breath you take involves a risk. And to think otherwise is to live in a dream world, but that's the dream world that we've been living in for the last over half a century in space.
I concur with you, and it really does seem to be a challenge when someone immediately jumps to the idea that you're not advocating safety for human spaceflight, to overcome that hurdle they put in their mind right off the bat.
Well, I am not advocating safety for human spaceflight. I'm not saying let's be stupid, but I'm advocating let's do stuff in space. That's what I'm advocating. And that's the point of the book. If we were serious about doing things in space, we'd be doing a lot of stuff in space, and people would die. And that's just life. That's life in every endeavor, except it seems to be that it's not allowable in space. That's the point of the book.
Well, it's hard to argue, because everything we do, from sports to racing, to, you know, going out on the San Francisco Bay for pleasure boating on a Sunday afternoon, you know, and something goes wrong with a sailboat. There's always that risk, and it, and at some point it always shows up, doesn't it?
Yep, and that, and that's the point of the book, is that space is just like any other place. People are going to do stuff, people are going to die. You know, live with it.
So why should space be any different than any other activity or anything that humans do?
Exactly. It shouldn't. And if it is, then we're not going to open it up. We're not going to go into space. And that sort of ties into the point of tonight's show, which is about the risk that people took to be the first people to go on the moon. And we could talk about Apollo 8. You know, we always talk about Apollo 11 because that's what this celebrates.
Right.
And tonight is the anniversary of the launch.
44 years ago.
They actually left the Earth.
44 years ago.
44 years ago, they actually left the Earth on July 16th to go to the moon.
Well, I have interviewed Buzz many, many times, and a lot of us know him and see him at conferences. And they did not know. They were taking an enormous risk on that mission. They knew it.
They knew there was a high chance. There was a good chance they weren't going to come back.
Absolutely. And I don't remember exactly what he put the odds at. Some, I think he put it one time at 50-50, but I may be hypothecating that one. But, you know, if they had waited for ultimate safety, we'd still be waiting.
Well, we actually still are.
The what?
We still are.
We're waiting for ultimate safety?
Exactly. That's the point of the book. We're still waiting for ultimate safety. One of the arguments put forth for the multi-billion dollar launch vehicles and astronauts to build is that they will be safe. When we have plenty of launch vehicles that are plenty safe, you know, by the context of space flight and opening up a frontier.
Let me ask you a question. If the ultimate government billions of dollars launch vehicle is going to ultimately be safe, why can't we buy a government car or fly on a government airline?
Are we
valued less? Are our lives valued less driving a car than going into space? Because other than government motors, but they're still not making the car, and other than you know, getting the government to operate an airline, I mean, they're still the same jets that we're flying. I mean, the president flies on a special 747, but it's special for security, not so much for its flight dynamics. So seriously, if the rocket is going to be built by the government to government specs for multi-billions of dollars for human safety, why isn't the government building our cars and our airplanes to keep us safe?
It all comes down to the appropriate balance between the government and the private role. And clearly, the problem is that a lot of people in the government say, well, we have to build these NASA vehicles because they'll be safe, and if we rely on commercial vehicles, they won't be safe. And they probably believe it, because, you know, when you have to believe something in order to advance your own political agenda, it becomes kind of ingrained. But, you know, it's nonsense. It's just the way you described it.
Well, to tie it into Ebola Terra, and listeners, I hope you go to the website, and if you click on the astronaut's helmet, you will open up the actual Ebola Terra ceremony from their website, EbolaTerra.com. There was enormous risk-taking back then. What happened in the intervening years?
Space became unimportant.
And it was only important then because we needed to beat the Ruskies up to the moon?
Exactly.
Of course, that's not in your ceremony, by the way.
No, it's not. No, the ceremony
actually it is.
Where I don't remember that in the ceremony.
Yeah, we talk about the space race.
No, but not space becoming unimportant.
Oh, no, because that's a discussion that takes place after this. The Ebola Terra is a commemoration of a couple of things at different levels. In one regard, literally, it's the commemoration of the landing on the moon. In a bigger sense, it's a celebration of the positive accomplishments of what the human race is capable of doing, and using that landing as an example. So, all right, there you go. So,
are you there?
Yeah. Yeah.
So something happened. I mean, aside from the fact that we won the Cold War, if it was a commemoration of what the human race is capable of doing in taking us forward, by all rights, it should have continued to take us forward.
Yeah, but that's our commemoration. It's not the government's commemoration.
So the government is completely different than what we're talking about.
Of course.
It's an event. Okay, so landing on the moon is an event of immense complexity. If we look at it from a timeline starting at the beginning of the universe, right?
Right.
And going all the way through time to where finally humans that evolved on the planet got to a point where they were able to leave the planet for the first time, that's a monumental milestone. We're looking at it from that standpoint. That there are a few things that you could look back in history and define as very clear watersheds in history. And this is one that's absolutely clear-cut. The first landing on another world. There will never be another first landing on another world. So even 1,000 years from now, that particular momentous occasion will be remembered.
Yeah, maybe, 10,000 years or more than that.
Hopefully.
Hopefully it'll be remembered and won't be forgotten.
Hopefully it'll be humans that are remembering it. But
by whatever definition.
So there's that. And then there's saying that we tend to focus all of our holidays, all of our commemorations. There's nothing that ever celebrated the positive of what humans can do.
Well, I think July 4th celebrates positive what humans can do.
Well, again, it's an occasion. Okay.
No, it's not about technology.
Zolotar was specifically designed to commemorate the accomplishments, positive accomplishments of humans. We're capable of doing good, and we're capable of doing not good.
No, and it was more specific than that. It was about our technological accomplishments. Our ability to master, the laws of physics and the universe, and actually, take all this understanding that we gained of how the world works physically, not sociologically, but physically, and go to the moon. That's at least to me, that's what it is.
Yeah.
If you thought of Evola Terra as chapter one and your crew got together to write chapter two 44 years after July 19th, I mean, what would you do?
Well, I don't know what you mean by chapter one, chapter two. Do you mean in terms of the next thing in space?
Yeah, the sequel.
It'd be pretty depressing.
Well, but it would still be there to be documented, is what I'm saying. So the sequel would be.
But I wouldn't put a ceremony. I guess it would be. I'm trying to. I'm drawing a blank right now, real time, trying to think of some kind of. It would be like Masada.
Let's put it in perspective.
It'd be awful.
Well, wait a minute, guys. You're having a discussion about it, but not. There wouldn't be a sequel any more than there would be a sequel to the Passover Seder.
Or there would be a
Seder is the Passover Seder.
Yeah, but there was like a, there's, okay, so this was sort of the sequel to when life came out of the sea and onto the land. Okay, so how do you, so what's the sequel to that? We went into space. I guess maybe when we leave the star system.
Or settlement maybe on another planet or world.
Yeah, maybe, I guess.
So that would be the next step.
Well, if that's tracking around, I'm trying to figure out which track you're going on. Because, you know, when you see what's going on in Congress, it's very clear that the government doesn't care about any of this stuff.
Well, that's true. And at the time of our early space program, the only reason they really cared about it was to beat the Russians.
Right. Yeah, they didn't care about them either. It was an accident. Just as the first life form coming on to, you know, from out of the sea onto the land was an accident.
Right. So there are those that actually were involved with doing this, if we call it an accident or whatever. There are others who observe it from a philosophical standpoint. And this is observing it from the philosophical standpoint. I don't really care about the details. In other words, we can analyze the reason why and how it came to be, and we actually discuss that in the ceremony. But the point is that this is something that humans were able to do that no other animal can do. People talk about animals. Can animals think? Can animals use tools? You know, they're always trying to figure out what is it that separates humans from animals. And what I would say is, other animals may see the moon. They may even dream about it. But we're the only ones that could dream about going there and then make it happen. Okay? So there are crows that make tools and use tools, okay? And there's chimpanzees that use tools. That's no longer the definition, the distinction between humans and animals. But I'll tell you what, there's no other organism that can dream about going to the moon and then making it happen.
So one of the things that is so important about the Passover Seder from thousands and thousands of years is the ability to continue to teach the story and the experience and freedom to new people that are born and grow up, and to carry those lessons with them, because they're important, and in a way they govern how people lead their lives. So, and Evola Terra is for teaching in the same fashion to people about what we did. To me, it's an incredibly powerful way to not lose sight of what we did and what we can do and how it affects our lives.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, something occurs to me that there is something new we can talk about this year, which is Steve Wolf's book.
Okay, and he was just on the show about a week ago.
Right, yeah, a week or two ago, whenever. And because it's...
On space settlement.
It's not about space settlement. It's like a philosophical basis about why we need to settle space. So it sort of ties together. You know, you can agree or disagree with the sort of philosophy, but he's laid out a very interesting case philosophically about why, you know, that we have an obligation. The name of the book is The Obligation.
The Obligation, yeah.
And we have an obligation as humanity to settle space because we have the ability to do so, and as far as we can tell right now, the universe is empty, though we're rapidly learning over the last year or two, or three or four or whatever. We've been looking for these planets for quite a while, and we've got a lot of instruments to do it now. We're learning that there are a lot of habitable planets out there. So the question is now, are they inhabited or are they not? But if they aren't, you know, is our duty to go out and inhabit them? Fundamentally, this is a philosophical discussion. Do we have a duty to fill the universe with life and intelligence? And this ceremony is part of, if that's true, that this was a huge, huge step even though it was kind of on a bad path, technologically speaking, you know, so it may have delayed us a few decades, because we did it too soon, we did it the wrong way, or whatever, but...
For the wrong reason.
And for the wrong reasons, which all relate.
It isn't always pretty. Look, if you're looking at it, I believe, too myopically, look at it from a scale of 1,000 years, or 1,000,000 years. Okay, the details of what bill was passed and each individual mission and how we got from here to there, that's almost like Brownian motion. The point is that we got to the moon. And 1,000 or 1,000,000 years from now, whatever it is, it's looking back, from wherever they're looking back at this, we want this event to be remembered. Going back to what you were saying about the Passover Seder and the effectiveness of that, is that it's a very simple story that's told each year that has maintained, and it's through ritual and story that maintains this legacy through the years.
Yeah. And that was the model we used.
The idea is that, and it's already forgotten. I mean, I don't know how many people know about July 20th. Does that have any significance? It's already being forgotten. And the point is that we don't want it to be forgotten. We want this particular event to be remembered even 1,000 years from now. And from the way actually this is written, it was written from a perspective of not necessarily being on Earth. We don't talk about, when you read through it, you'll find out we talk about the solar system and the home world, as opposed to just referring to Earth. It's referred to as the home planet or the home world, because this may be celebrated on other planets at some time in the future.
Yeah, so, and of course those other planets may have different calendars and whatever, and they'll figure it out. But the interesting thing about this particular year is, okay, it's a Saturday night. So it's a good time to get people together for a dinner.
Yeah, that's what we would recommend. This is a perfect opportunity. Many times when we do this, when we do this show, it's either the day of or very close, or it's a weekday. What we recommend is that, because it's Saturday, Saturday is July 20th. That's the day that we landed on.
We landed, right.
That
and again, tonight's the night you launched.
That's right.
So what we recommend is that you get a couple of friends and have dinner. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Just get together and read, download, and you take turns reading the ceremony, paragraph by paragraph, and it'll be a wonderful experience. That's all I can say from all the times that we've done it and all the people that have participated. They have been very, very moved by this ceremony.
Yeah, no one's ever said, that sucked. I hated that. I'm never going to do it again.
And make sure your kids are involved in it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really for kids. I have a question coming in that has come in. You guys probably won't like it, but you're perfectly capable of answering it. So this is from Kurt, okay? And he says, Ebola Terra seems to be a nice ceremony and remembrance event. While the event that is being commemorated, that would be better, is monumentous and largely underplayed and underappreciated by most of society, to canonize it in this way seems to be pushing it to religious levels. Are you worried that someone may take this to the extreme and make a cult around this, given that in 99, 6% of Americans think the moon landing was fake, and it seems an even larger percentage. Let's just leave it at that, because I don't know what he's trying to say. 6% in 1999, he says, think it was fake. So even a larger percentage, I guess, would be PO'd that you're turning it into a religious ceremony or religious cult. So what do you have to say about that, canonizing it as a religious ceremony?
Okay. Again, the landing itself is used as the example. And what we are canonizing, if you will, is man's accomplishment. So let me just read this. This is in the introduction. On July 20th of each year, we gather to commemorate the wondrous accomplishment achieved by human beings of planet Earth. During this celebration, we retell the story of the evolving universe, life, and that first landing by humans on the moon of Earth. What better time to tell the story of our aspirations and accomplishments than on the anniversary of the highest achievement of our hands, hearts, and minds, and one of the most dramatic events in modern time, that first landing. Of all the formal holidays celebrated by the people of Earth, few, if any, recognize the peaceful and productive technological achievements accomplished by human beings as individuals or as a species. This, then, is our opportunity to tell the story of the species that not only dreams, but has the ability to make those dreams a reality, to honor those who advanced our body of knowledge, and to recognize the profound significance of thought, reason, and the methods of science, to become aware of the new and exciting possibilities that technology...
I'd say that if someone wants to make a religion out of that, there could be a lot worse religions than there are.
Well, there are.
Yeah, that's... It's not the landing.
Am I worried about that? No.
Yeah, it's not the landing that's being canonized.
Claire is in Boston and sent in a note, and she says, I've never understood why neither NASA or the U.S. government has made a big deal or even suggested a holiday out of our having accomplished what you're talking about with Ebola Terra. Do you guys have any information on why that is so?
Because space isn't important.
I mean, honestly, of course, all you're hearing today on the news is Trayvon Martin, right, and Zimmerman.
Yeah,
there's nothing
that's
else.
Important.
That's important,
obviously.
But I haven't heard anybody say today is the day
important.
We launched
space
for them.
Space is not important.
Well,
you don't understand that space is not important.
No.
But, Durand, this is a really important day in the history of humanity.
No, it's not.
I think it's really an important. I think it's a more important day than George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin.
Who cares what you think?
Obviously,
wait a minute, come on,
not
Brand,
important.
Wait.
This is
wait,
this,
Brand.
You
Brand,
you
I know you're being facetious, Brand.
To understand space politics, space policy.
Wait a minute, guys. Wait.
Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. Look, we just
finished a book
This is an anniversary of an event that's 44 years ago. It's the launch of Apollo 11. As enthralled as I am with the whole thing, even I wouldn't have made a deal about that. It's only in the contents of the celebration that we bring it to light. We just celebrated, or not, we just, I don't know if the word celebrate is correct, but we just recognized the 150th anniversary of Gettysburg.
Yeah, commemorated.
Okay, so
right. This
won't be forgotten. You know, it tends to be on even years years ending in zeros for anniversaries have some big significance.
Yeah, there'll be a 50th year deal.
So, yeah, the 50th will be a big deal. And that's the way we typically remember it. Rand, it's not that space isn't important. Space is important. It's important to a lot of people. And we as a species are going into space. Whether it happens in our lifetime or not, that's the question. And it's aggravating, it's depressing, and everything else that for the last 30 years, everything that we know that could have taken place hasn't taken place. But it doesn't mean that in 300 years it won't.
No, when I say it's not important, I mean it is not important to the people who make decisions about space policy in Washington.
Yeah, but they're not the ones that are... Look, it may not even be this country that does it. There's other countries right now that are going into space.
And
there
that'll be
individuals.
A bad thing.
Bite your tongue, Bill.
No, that will be a bad thing. If there are other countries lead the way into space, there will be other cultures who dominate space.
Hello. Yeah, well, that's the way it goes.
Because the Chinese are sending a few people into space, the Chinese are leading in space. Nobody's leading in space. Nobody is leading in space. Nobody is serious about space. Except,
well, there, but we're
America
on, but Grant, as you
space.
Know, and
hey, one at a time.
Serious about space.
Guys, you got to go one at a time, or we can't understand anybody.
Yeah, but as you know, there are lots of entrepreneurs right now
exactly. That
are we're on the cusp of a new era in space, and it won't be the government per se.
No, it won't. So, but the problem is that because space isn't important. The government has policies in place that not only don't help, but they actually hold us back.
And that comes back.
And therein lies the tie-in to the book.
Right, I was just going to say that. That is the book that you're right, you've
though,
written.
I won't claim that the book encapsulates all of the problems. It's just one aspect of the problem.
No, but that's the aspect where the government, which is not necessarily the entity that should be pushing us into space, but they're the entity that's going to hinder those who want to go into space. And
yeah, but
that's
again, it's
the problem.
Again, the government can do it in lots of other ways. The book is just one way that they're doing that.
Yeah.
To be depressing, the problem is that government is not leading us into space. Government is hobbling us. And the book describes just one way in which they're doing that. But the book also it's not just about the government; it's about society and about societal attitudes, and that's something that the book can change. The book's probably not going to change how government attitudes directly. The point of the book is to try to change people's minds so they can influence the government to say stop doing this.
When we were doing Mercury, Gemini, and eventually Apollo, was the government hobbling us?
No. The government was leading.
So what happened? Was it just really the end of the Cold War?
It was a battle. It was a war.
It was a war,
but it was like the first war that was fought not by taking territory and by killing people, but by demonstrating technological achievements. And it was a one-upmanship. It was a continuous one-upmanship. And as it started out, because of the way that it started, which was on ballistic missiles, and because the USA had higher technology, our warheads were lightweight compared to the Russian warheads. So guess what? The Russians had to build big rockets. We didn't have to build big rockets. So their rockets were capable of launching more into space than ours.
Yeah. No,
we also started out with the attitude that it couldn't be military.
Yeah, but it wasn't quite that simple. We were also held back by the attitude of the government that we wanted to have a public base of a civil space program. We had big rockets. We could have put stuff up earlier.
Earlier, if we had wanted to do it.
They told them, don't allow stuff to go up on a Jupiter.
Put it in
ballast. So the rockets were not that much bigger than ours were. They were somewhat bigger and somewhat for the reasons, but there was a lot of politics involved as well.
But the whole thing was that the Russians would launch. They always got the first, and it was a big deal to be first. That was the big deal. Who was the first to put a dog into space, or an animal, let's put it that way? Who was the first to put a human in orbit? Who was the first to put a woman in space? Any first that they could do, they did. And recognizing this, Kennedy came up with the idea, not that he came up with the idea, but he proposed the idea that it'd be the first to the moon.
Well,
and
he came up with the idea that he'd be first to do something, And then and he asked Von Braun, what can we be first to do? And he said, well, we can't beat him to a space station. We can probably beat him to the moon. So it became
right.
the moon.
Because neither one of us had the technological ability to reach the moon. It was starting from scratch for both.
Yep.
And it was close.
Both could get it.
They were building a moon rocket, and let me tell you how close it was. They launched Apollo 8 to the moon without a lunar module, without the LEM, the Lunar Excursion Module, which was designed to be play the role of a lifeboat. And as we know from Apollo 13, how it was used, it was designed to fulfill that role. If necessary, those guys went to the moon without the lunar module because it was still in production. But there was so much pressure because it looked like the Russians were about to scoop us on that one as well. So the launch of the Saturn with the Apollo 8 was like the first full up mission with the guys on top shot to the moon. It was a huge, huge risk. Now,
that's the point, though, that we make in the book.
Yeah, but why would you take that kind of a risk? You take that kind of a risk because there was so much at stake. Now, if there's nothing at stake, you wouldn't take that risk. And that's the problem. There's nothing at stake today. Back then, everything was at stake. It would be like, would you run it? If a house was on fire, would you run into the house? No, but if there was somebody in there that had to be rescued, yeah, you might run in there and try to do what you can to get them out. That's the difference.
And that's why safe is an option, because there's nothing in space that's worth risking human life for right now to the American government.
I have a question on email from you guys, okay? This is Paul in Evanston, Illinois. And he says, sorry, David, no access to the phone. I am a professor, and I teach history, and I have lots of teenagers and young adults as students and people that hang around, and they're clueless about what you're talking about tonight. I think if I assigned Evola Terra as an assignment, the benefit would be that they would actually learn what we did and learn the potential, which you have talked about a little bit, of what people can do when they set their minds to it and make the commitment to do it. And I'm not sure they get that from very many of their teachings and assignments in today's school programs. I think I will have my classes read Evola Terra, but unfortunately we're out for the summer. But I think that's the benefit as I see it. I don't think a lot of young people even know what you're talking about today, nor do they have any experience of accomplishment of what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, you know, in that sense, it's a little unfortunate. Just the way it happened historically, it just happened this summer, so you can't do it during the school year. But I think he's right. But he won't just learn about how we went to the moon. If you read Evola Terra, you learn the entire history of the universe in, you know, a very brief period of time, but focused on how all of it, all of the Big Bang, the Earth form, you know, the stars forming, the Earth forming, life forming, coming out of the sea, coming onto the land, and then developing the primates and people who could see in 3D and grasp and throw and figure out math and science and technology and how that all led to us getting to the moon.
Yep.
You connect the dots, which people today don't really have the capability of doing.
Right. What you want to picture is if you had a thread that could go all the way back through time from that landing on the moon, and then what just preceded that, and then what just preceded that, and you keep going all the way back.
Yeah, how does that happen?
That's what Rand is describing. Now, our world, of course, is full of trillions of strings, this is the of strings of time that lead to different events, right? But this is the string that Evola Terra follows, that string of events, and the key people that played roles along the way. And I, it's a to the person who emailed in there, it's a wonderful idea. It would be fantastic if you did that. And I would also point out that at the back of the ceremony is a list of all of the players, if you will, all the names of the people that we recognize in the ceremony.
Yeah, Galileo, Newton, Coulomb, everybody,
well,
all of them.
But some that you may not be familiar with, von Karman and others like Tesla and whatever. But the point is, from a teacher's guide standpoint, it's already got built into it. These names, you could assign those names to the students. In other words, not only would they read Evola Terra, but you could have the students do reports on each one of those, or let them pick whatever name they want to pick and go do a report on the Curies.
Yeah, who's this guy or gal?
Fascinating. They kind of like having a workbook along with the ceremony.
Exactly. That was part of the intent.
Names, you know, Robert Fulton and all these names are names that I grew up with when I was a kid. I knew these names. Who invented this? Who invented that? Who discovered this? Who discovered that? And these are important to remember. They don't teach that anymore.
Alan Turing. Did you know who that was?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure we have Turing in the.
No, you do. I'm reading his name.
Yeah. He's invented the computer.
Well, and if you want to make a slicker correct, you can say, well, and he was, you know, persecuted for being gay, and he committed suicide.
Well, okay.
Well, I'm saying, Ravavka, if that's the way you need to bring him into the classroom, okay, fine, but.
Well, anyway, there's plenty there, and there'd be plenty more beyond that. In other words, this is just the first cut at it. If a class wanted to take this, this could be a basis of a whole semester's worth of study.
Right. So, you know, for listeners, if you decide to do Evola Terra this Saturday on the 20th, or for that matter, any time. Why don't you go around the table or assign ahead of time your kids or the guest to take a couple of these people and look them up on Wikipedia or something, and then spend 20 seconds and tell people at the end of the ceremony who the people are that you looked up. Because I guarantee you, most everyone out there, unless you're a space cadet or an engineering or science cadet, you're not going to know who these people are. Other than the really famous names, you'd probably know who von Braun was, but you know, you might know who Robert Goddard was. I mean, honestly, you won't know who John Baird was. I doubt that you'll know Yuri Gagarin.
They would know Gagarin, but they may not know Tsiolkovsky.
I don't know. You think people outside the space community would know Gagarin? I really don't know that. Herman Oberth.
You know, knew who Newton was.
Well, they learn Newton in school, whether they remember it, but they don't learn.
The apple fell on his head. That's all they know about Newton.
Well, exactly. They don't learn Herman Oberth in school unless they go on to graduate school and study some of the engineering and rocket science and stuff. But I don't know. I would just make it more meaningful and relevant by saying, okay, everybody pick one or two of these people and tell us who they are after the ceremony ends.
And here's something that's interesting. When we were writing this, we were debating about, should we just be generic or should we put the names in? And I really wanted the names in there because it comes down to individuals. We could have said, well, and then we got to the point where we understood the laws of motion and gravity and whatever. We could have left it in that way, right?
Right.
But by tying it to Newton, it wasn't that we became knowledgeable about this stuff. It was somebody who did that And it's repeated over and over and over at each step along the way that it all comes down to individuals.
Yeah, and it personalizes it, makes it more human.
Huh?
I said it personalizes it and makes it more human.
Yeah, this is the accomplishment of our of what humans have been able to do.
And young people can think, oh, well, I could make the next great, I could just, you know, discover this warp drive or whatever.
Right, it's a collection of individual efforts together that took us to the moon over this timeline.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of when I was reading about Apollo 13. I lived through Apollo 13.
We all did.
I'm old enough.
Yeah.
And
no, not all of us, just old-timers like us.
No, yeah. The three of us
and,
did.
And I knew when they had the problem, I knew they would solve it. I knew it. But it's always they would solve it. But when I read about it later, when I read about the story, I read the stories about the guys who are sitting there with their hand at the console, with their hands wrapped around the handles of the rack-mounted panel, frozen, having to make a decision. A decision that they had no clue what the ramification was going to be because they had never been here before. And that's when you realize it's not they, it's some guy somewhere. One guy, many times, it's one guy making a decision that makes it a success or not. And that's the point. It comes down to individuals.
Guys, we need to take a break. We're more than halfway through. So, listeners, we'll take your calls if you would like to call in and join in our discussion. 1-866-687-7223. Email still welcome, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Back in 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with The Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support The Space Show button. Your contribution will help The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to The Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And The Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. And welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Tuesday Space Show, Part 2. Rand Simberg is with us, Bill Simon. We're talking about their ceremony, Evola Terra, WWEVOLOTERRA, when we first left this planet to go to another planet. Rand, you actually have an email that has come in from Larry in San Diego, and he says, I consider myself a space enthusiast, but I have to admit, in the United States today, we have a blank load of problems, both socially, culturally, and also economically. So I'm wondering if it's fair to say the policymakers don't care about space when they're up to their eyeballs in trying to figure out how to have policies that get us into a better economy, save people's homes, deal with a medical catastrophe that's on the horizon, and all sorts of problems that seem to overwhelm space as an issue?
Yes.
Yes.
I think it is fair to criticize.
It's fair to, so.
Because the problem with Congress is that it just delegates, yes, it has all these important, quote-unquote, issues to deal with. I think space is an important issue. They don't. But the problem is that the leadership of both houses just delegates space policy. It doesn't care. It completely does not care. So what it's saying is that we don't, because it delegates it to the committees. And the people on the committees are the people who don't care about space. They only care about whether or not there are jobs in their districts or states. That's a little harsh, but not very. That is their primary motivation. The reason they, for the most part, very few people get on the space committees because they think space is really important. I want to make sure we have good space policy. The people who get on the space committees are the people who have jobs in their states and districts. And they will promote policy that maximizes or preserves jobs in their states and districts. And whether anything actually happens in space or not is, I won't say completely, but pretty much completely irrelevant to them.
You know, I used to cut Congress a little bit more slack than I do today, but most of the problems that Larry talked about are of the making of Congress in the first place. So yeah. Whether that's too harsh or not, I'll let people be the judge. And again, it's nonpartisan. I'm not pointing to this guy or that guy or this party or that party. But it seems like they are pretty inept in what they do, and then they spend their time trying to patch or fix what they do without accepting accountability for having done it in the first place, and then they just keep piling on and making things worse and worse.
Yeah.
And actually, things like space that could possibly drive us into job creation and wealth expansion and a lot of other things,
yeah,
they don't even get considered.
But I didn't quite completely answer the question.
Okay.
The point is, the evidence that they don't care about space is that that's what they do. They allow the people to make decisions about space who don't care about space. And it's such a trivial, such a tiny amount of the budget. They could make smart, if they cared about space, if Congress cared about space, it could make better decisions about space, and it wouldn't affect, it would be completely fiscally, you know, nobody would notice it. But space,
well,
because space isn't important, they leave it up to the people who want to be on the space committees, make the decisions, and the people who want to be in the space committees don't care about space, they care about jobs. That's all they care about. The first order, again. I mean, you can always talk about exceptions, but the first order, that's what happens. Because space is not important to the leadership of either the House or the Senate.
Bill, do you want to add in on this?
Yeah, I would say, what would it take to make it important?
Okay.
If an asteroid were heading this way, it was going to hit us 6 months, space would suddenly become important, it would be too late for it to be important.
Okay, so now you've raised a very interesting issue, which is in the purview of the government, and they are becoming interested in this. So,
Not sufficiently.
Not yet, but look. Back in the day, it was Wernher von Braun who teamed with Disney and got us all excited about space, and basically his vision came to fruition.
No,
we need something like that.
No, it didn't.
It started.
Not come to fruition.
Well, it did.
To send people to Mars.
He wanted to go to Mars and had the big Mars spaceship.
Guys, it got curtailed.
And he wanted reusable vehicles. That was von Braun's vision. He wanted massive fleets of reusable vehicles, and he wanted to send them to Mars. That was von Braun's vision.
There's no question
he
about that.
What he could get. What he was offered was, he grasped at it, he seized it. Kennedy said, so he built a space station, go to the moon. He said, we'll go to the moon. I hope with the moon stuff we build to go to the moon, we'll get to Mars. It didn't work out.
It didn't work out. And
yeah, but things don't necessarily work. But it, we got to the moon. It then got curtailed. Look, if you look at the vehicle assembly building, that was built with four bays.
Yes,
they don't need four bays. Wait a minute. They don't need four bays.
That was Von Braun's vision. He did as much as he could with the opportunity he had, and then it all came to naught.
Yes. He described it as an apple orchard, which takes 10 years before it produces fruit. And he described that what we had done is we developed an apple orchard, and just as it was producing fruit, they destroyed it. But he still got his apples. He got his first crop. So when I say that it came to fruition, he got the vehicle assembly building with four high bays in it. It was the conquest of space had begun, and it was killed.
But
because, for whatever reason, there's no vision here.
No, of course not.
Well, wait a minute.
That's the point. It wasn't important. Space was not important.
Let me ask you this. Is there vision from the Soviet Union?
No.
Well, why did they go into space first? How did they come up with that idea?
Because for the same reason we said we're going to go to the moon. It was all about propaganda. They didn't care.
Supposing that we never reacted to them. They put up Sputnik. They put up the dogs. They put a human up there. And we know they were going to the moon.
They would have given up.
Well, suppose we never reacted to it.
No, they would have given up.
Keep in mind.
We didn't really
Whoa. One at a time, guys, or nobody can hear
anything. Let me finish my point. Keep in mind that every other country on the planet didn't challenge them. So what if we didn't challenge them? Would they have not done any more?
At some point, if it wasn't buying them anything in terms of political influence and power, they would have quit.
I have another email question I'm going to throw at you guys rather than than the two authors going at each other. So this is from Diana, okay, and Diana's in Salt Lake City. And Diana says, I've been reading Evola Terra as you guys have been going back and forth. And let's put some things in perspective. Early on in your ceremony, you talk about when did fulfillment begin, and you reference the Big Bang at about 14 billion years ago. And then all of a sudden in 1969, we're able to launch and go to the moon, and plus we've been doing a lot of work ahead of that, too, to make that happen. So if you put this in perspective, we go to the moon in 1969. It seems to me that going to Mars and doing other really cool things that a lot of we enthusiasts dream about and visualize and would like to see happen in just 44 years is really a speeding up of the kind of timeline it takes to accomplish these kinds of great things and great changes. Maybe 14 billion years is a little too long to wait for the next big leap, but maybe 44 years is way too short. What do you think about that?
What I think about is that it's a good point, but the reason that we didn't make more progress since then is that we set off on a bad path.
Yeah, but I wish, Diana, you would call in and 866-687-7223. So let me put some words in Diana's mouth. If it takes a long time to establish, accomplish, and make these changes, then the challenges, the roadblocks, the wrong paths, the left turns, you know, the falling down, the screw-ups, the big accidents that happen, all of that is part of what has to be worked through in the natural order of things to get to the next place. So maybe it's not 14 billion years, but honestly, maybe it's 100 or 150 years. And we have to go through something like what we're going through in order to advance to the next point.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know that.
I'm not saying that's not the case, but you can look at the history of the last 50 years. You can see so many paths, every one of which would be much more fruitful than the one we were on.
But you can say that about the Middle East. You can say that about
anything.
Say
that about the Middle East. You can't say that about the Middle East.
I think you can see different paths.
No,
paths with different consequences and outcomes for just about everything we do.
Yeah. Rand, what we're dealing with here is a very complex system of forces at work here.
And more complex.
And the result that you get isn't necessarily the beautiful, wonderful way that you might have wished it could have been done, but this is the way it is.
I was looking for one that wasn't like about the worst way.
But we're more complex because we in the United States do have a messy system, and we got human involvement. And, man, every time you get human involvement in something and all these systems and bureaucracies and everything, it's a total mess.
No. Here's my argument.
Okay.
Space is a mess just from a purely historical contingency that it got started on a military base. Because of the Cold War, because of Apollo, that if it had followed the natural path of every other transportation system in history, and including most of all U.S. history, we would be much, much farther along. But we were derailed by the moon, by the fact that we all of a sudden, 20, 30, 40 years before any the most visionary science fiction authors, Clark, Heinlein, whoever, said they would have thought you were crazy if you told them in 1955 that we're going to be on the moon 15 years later. They would have said you were nuts. You were out of your mind. The only reason that happened is because of these historical Cold War contingency that said, oh, we have to beat the Russians to the moon. And because of that, the entire mindset of how we do space was set in stone for decades. And it screwed us up for decades.
Okay.
That is my thesis.
Right. Okay. But that's the way life works.
My point is there are many, many ways it could have happened differently. It would have been more likely that it would have happened differently if that had not happened.
But it did happen.
We'd be much farther along if we hadn't gone.
No, we wouldn't. We may never be to the moon.
But it did. It did happen that way.
It did happen that way.
So what do we do now to shorten what Diana is talking about this in the time?
We need to learn the lessons from what went wrong. And when you say, we should just expect it to take, another, 100 million years? I don't know what Diana wants.
Well, she just is talking about it. It may take a lot longer than 44 years.
Okay, 14 billion years, but now we're... No, I'm sorry. I don't buy it. It could...
Okay.
When you look at the trajectory of technology through the 20th century, and you saw what happened in the late 50s, early 60s, you can imagine many plausible alternatives that would have gotten us a lot farther in space by now than we've gotten. We took a very, very bad path for a completely historical, contingent reason.
Okay. I'd like to address the question.
Okay.
For a second. All right. I recall Shackleton going down to explore the South Pole and other explorers going to the South Pole and making heroic efforts, Amundsen and Scott and all these guys. 20 years later, they're flying over the South Pole. 20 years. So what is it about us humans that say, why don't we just sit around for another 20 years? Because 20 years from now, we'll be able to just fly over the South Pole. Why do we need to kill ourselves with sled dogs going there? Actually, those are the guys that didn't kill themselves. But because there's something about us that says we want it and we want it now. And it's that drive that pushes us. Now, in some endeavors, it's too big for any one individual. And then we have to work as a group, and then we get to push the organizations, and then we deal with all the politics and everything else that goes with it. But we're driven. We want it now. And in terms of Do we need to say sit around and wait 150 years? Yes, 150 years from now, I would be shocked if we weren't flying to Mars. But when we were geared up to go to the moon, when we had four high bays available in the vehicle assembly building to build four Saturn V's at a time, which is what they were gearing up to do, and the conquest of space had begun, you have an immense machine, and I mean, I'm using this metaphorically, a flywheel of humanity that's turning, this tremendous energy that's running. People who are going to work, doing their task each day for each piece of that puzzle. And you don't say, you know what, we're going to wait 150 years because we're going to be going to Mars 150 years from now. You guys don't have to do it now. They were geared up to do it.
Well, but that's a straw man.
They were geared up
to
do it, and I don't believe it would have been that difficult.
It was not an affordable way to open up space.
Well, they canceled the program.
Wait. Rand, I'm not arguing that. I'm trying to address the question, and that is, there's two ways to look at it. You can wait, because eventually we will get there. Or you go for it. Now, in fact, the reason you can wait 150 years and know that 150 years from now you'll be able to go to Mars is because there's people pushing today to do it.
There were people pushing then to do it.
That's because of them and because of the people today and the people in the next 50 years or whatever it takes. Or if Elon has his way, it'll be a lot sooner.
Yes, but my point remains that Apollo was a false path to space.
Yeah, Rand, we got that. We got
well,
that.
Okay,
but that's
then
his,
I don't
Rand,
your
that,
point.
But that's Rand, that's history. When you mix up the cake mix, it isn't being done beautifully. It's a mess, and this is what we got. This is how we got there. But that we didn't capitalize on it is the crying shame.
But we didn't capitalize on it because the government didn't care, and the government put up a lot of barriers, and we've been fighting those barriers. And many of them were psychological, based on everything that happened in the 60s, and we've been fighting those for decades.
Maybe those of us...
Only now, finally breaking out of them.
Maybe those of us that did fight these battles early on and all of that, maybe the arguments we put forth weren't very compelling. Maybe we did it.
Weren't.
Maybe we did it wrong too.
Well, yeah, obviously we didn't. Nobody quite understood the problem at the time, or the people that did. There was always a disconnect between people who understood the problem and people who had the money, and only now. Is the people, are those things coming together? That finally people who understand how to open up space and the money are coming together.
But by the way, I have several.
But the reason that took so long to happen was because of the false perceptions laid in place by Apollo.
Well,
it was also, I might say, again, the interference by government
that's the same thing.
No, wait. The interference by government that prevented startup entities
that was a separate but also important factor. You're right.
Okay, by preventing startup entities from being funded by private individuals because the SEC said it was too risky, you couldn't do it.
Well, it wasn't just the SEC. It was NASA. It was everybody saying, "Oh, you can't. Oh, you're
it's a government
money.
Domain.
Don't put your money into this stuff."
Yeah.
So anyway.
So it's just been a policy disaster the last 50 years.
So what is
40 years anyway?
So what does Evola Terra do to counter this for people that come across it, that read it, that are going to do it Saturday evening?
Not much.
Well,
not to say they shouldn't do it, but it's not going to solve that problem. Evola Terra just kind of reinforces if you think it was important that we went to the moon, if you think it's important for life. To leave Earth, to expand into the universe, and you should celebrate Evola Terra. That's it. Don't expect Evola Terra or celebrating Evola Terra itself the policy problems. It's not going to do that.
Another way to look at it, if you want to, that it
inspires you to go out and learn more and try to want to do more to solve that.
And another way to look at it is if you want to feel good in this time of nothing but negative news, this is something that actually will be inspiring.
Yes, it is that, for sure.
Yeah, that's what it's really... It's about inspiration, and it's about remembering. It's about remembering. It's just the same way the Passover is about remembering. It was inspired by that Passover, and it was exactly the same intent. We had a bunch of people sitting around 30 years ago saying, we think this is important. We want to figure out how do we pass this what we think is important onto our kids. So we came up with a ceremony, and by doing it in that sense, it became a religious ceremony.
June in New York City says, do you think it is as important today as it was when you did it 30 years ago? By the way, she says, the TV is on. I'm listening to your show through headphones. My family is watching the baseball game, so I'm not going to pick up the phone. So she's explaining, I guess, why she sent me an email. So the baseball game is in New York tonight anyway.
Who's winning?
I turned it off because the National League was getting creamed, but I think the American League probably won. The game's probably over with by now.
That's great news. I wonder how Cabrera and Fielder did.
I don't know. It's the bottom of the ninth, and it is the All-Stars on the American League 3. And the National League 0. The National League has
They have a natural advantage because of the designated hitter rule.
Yeah, but they're playing in a National League park, so they're not. So they don't get the designated hitter rule tonight.
Anyway,
that's not about space.
What was the question?
I don't know. Oh, is it as relevant today as it was 30 years ago for remembering?
I didn't want to blow her off because of the game, because it was a good question. Is it relevant today as it was then?
Yeah.
We had this idea that there was a bunch of young people interested in space, and we were thinking about raising families. We were thinking about how would we raise our families with our beliefs. And some of the people involved with it say, we didn't really want to be a religion. We don't want to be this. We don't want to be a secularist Sunday school or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, that was our first question, kind of.
Yeah. I don't know how to answer that question, really. That's a really great question.
I don't know. I would say it is relevant because the idea was designed to be read 100 years from now. And if it's not relevant 100 years from now, then it should be as relevant 100 years from now as it was the day it was written.
Yes, at least.
Well, I think it's relevant.
So that means it's relevant today.
I think it's relevant today, so I'll tell you a story that happened today, why I think it's one of the many reasons why I think it's relevant. I had to call my car insurance company for some policy information. So I'm connected to a guy, very pleasant guy in Las Vegas, who's taking down all the information and telling me, you know, my new policy number because they're changing it and stuff like that. And so he actually ask what I do, and I said, go to www.thespaceshow.com. I host this radio show, and he starts looking at the website while we're talking, and then he says, you know, we never went to the moon. And I said, come on, don't give me this crap. And I think he really meant it, but then he kind of backed off about it.
Well,
and
he wants to sell the insurance.
So, you know,
but he probably believes it.
But
which is depressing.
Well, yeah, it is depressing. So I said, if you can listen to the show tonight, because we're commemorating going to the moon. And he said, when did we do that? And I said, well, we launched today, 44 years ago, and on the 20th we landed on the moon. And he says, but we didn't really land on the moon, did we? And he said, have you seen these documentaries about how they faked the moon landing?
I guess my response is always, well, if you believe those documentaries, you don't understand anything about physics or science or optics or anything.
Well, you know, I'm just saying
I know,
the reason it is relevant,
there are people that believe that, yeah,
is because we have people around that are clueless as to what we did, which means they're clueless as to what people can do.
Yeah,
Well,
it's like Jeff Grayson said in that TEDx thing, you know.
Yeah.
A dark age isn't when you have forgotten how to do something. It's when you've forgotten that you ever even did it.
Then you even did it.
Well, I would say this to address that question. There are two stories. One story is that we went to the moon, we landed on the moon, and the men came back to Earth. The other story is we never did it, and it was fake. My question is, why would you choose to believe the latter instead of the former? You're choosing to believe a story.
The person.
What?
It's a good insight into the psychology of the individual.
No. This is my question to the person.
Well,
he's not with us.
You choose to believe it. Why? Because you saw this documentary. But did you read the history? Do you know what took place? Do you know what we're capable of doing? Do you believe that rockets exist? Do you believe rockets actually go into space? Do you believe that we can send spacecraft to the moon, or is it that you can't send people to the moon? I need to find out, where is it? What is it they don't believe?
Yeah, where's the
they may not even believe rockets exist, in which case you've got a real problem with that person. So the
Yeah, do you believe the Earth is round or is it flat?
I don't know.
Well, you got it. No, but if they think it was fake, you would say, why would they fake it? Because we couldn't do it. So, and why couldn't we do it? In other words, you'd find out where is it that it breaks down. And
yeah, I know, but it's so much work because you have to deal with everyone on an individual basis to find out where these belief boundaries are.
I wouldn't have a problem dealing with it if I had to deal on an individual basis. But the thing is that what they are inculcated with conspiracies on every level, not just about the moon, on everything. And they choose to believe the conspiracy. And once you buy into a conspiracy, there's no way out of it, because no matter what you use as evidence, it's just more conspiracy.
You can't
resolve it. No matter what. And by the way, for anyone who cares, the game is over, and the American League won 3-0. I don't know how your players. And that's
not like a blowout the way you were describing it earlier.
Okay, guys, you actually have a phone call instead of email. Hold on. Good evening. This is the Space Show. Who are you and where are you?
This is Charles Loyal in Boston.
Oh, Charles. You're listening to us instead of coast to coast, huh?
They're not on yet. Anyway, I told you I just got you.
So Charles is one of those who believes we never went to the moon, but he doesn't write that way.
Yes, he's an Eeyore who believes that.
Well, so I would ask him the question: what is it about it that you would choose not to accept that?
Charles doesn't really believe that.
No, I'm just kidding, Charles.
Please don't.
Oh.
I'm getting so red you can see it from across the country.
That's right. It's the sunrise.
Yes, I can see it out the window here in California.
Thank you so much.
Go for it, Charles.
I was just going to say that in view of what we're saying about the modeling of this on the Vader, often a metaphor that is used that I've heard is that the exodus from Egypt is something that takes time, and it's an exodus from the narrow place, in fact. It's what often is used as a metaphor. I mean, the Nile is next. The Nile Valley is narrow and so forth, and in terms of one's own personal transition, it's a change from a narrow place as well, and so carrying it over to your ceremony, you might say that we're still walking through that narrow place.
So we haven't split the Red Sea yet?
Yeah, well, it might be the that version of the Red Sea or the what I'm saying is simply that, you know, it takes time, and you know, someday there will be a place, and it will at the end, at least for the society collectively and for the individuals that are involved with that, and that's the time when the ceremony will become relevant, when people are in fact, whether it's this ceremony or something else.
Well, that, you know, again, we always imagine that somebody would, you know, even in the near term, somebody would be on the moon by now. When we wrote it, you know, 30 years ago, started writing it 30 years ago, we thought, on the moon somehow, by now, somebody would be singing on the moon.
So did I, of course.
So did we all. We thought we'd be on Mars.
No, I didn't think we'd be on Mars.
Let's not talk about, you know, it was much too slow to go to Mars in 1986. We had to go by 1978. You remember that one?
Yeah, right.
But anyway, which was the premise of a kind of crappy novel, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm hearing the theme of from West Side Story, there's a place for us.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
There's a place for us.
Yeah, we're in Forest Lawn.
They're halfway there. Anyway, like halfway to orbit. I never thought about that in that context before. It's interesting.
So your point, Charles, is?
My point is that I just thought it would be interesting to say, to know that, you know, it's a narrow place we've been in for the last 44 years, and it's a narrow place being only on Earth, and it's we will create the opportunity if we can.
So are you saying we need to figure out how to split the sea, or what? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how to extend this metaphor.
I'm trying to figure out where we're going.
I can't you just accept the beauty of my poetic imagination?
It's beautiful, Charles.
I'm struggling, Charles.
It's beautiful, but I understand.
And Bill is speechless.
Well, I just think we're in the wilderness, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we're wandering in the wilderness for 4 years. It's been 44 years.
But we've been through our 40 years.
Well, yes. And so, okay.
But there's inflation.
I think we're beating this metaphor more than to death. Like a horror.
You know, a lot of people seriously don't like the religious metaphors for space and think that that in itself is one of the turnoffs that keeps us grounded.
I doubt it.
That's completely irrelevant.
Because yeah, you're doing the metal.
I don't think that's a problem.
It's only
a problem for people who are interested in space.
Well, everything's a problem for people interested
in
space.
You know, it's a ceremony looking for a circumstance. The circumstance will be there when we have gotten beyond to the point where we are, in fact, living on other.
Space religions are the least of our problems, right?
Yeah, I mean it's exactly.
We're warring with each other, then that'll be a problem.
I mean, we've got enough problem with the wacko UFO religions and so forth, but that's also not exactly a big problem.
No, our biggest problem is that we have a government that doesn't care about space. And not only doesn't care about space, but cares about stuff that it does that is actively antipathetic to space. Not that, not that it cares about space, but it just does stuff that's bad for space because it doesn't care. Because there are other stuff more important. I was just looking at
a comment on your website a couple minutes ago. A fellow was saying that, you know, he's worked at a major NASA.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Manned Space Center for 30 years, and basically the culture is rotten in NASA, and it's rotten because they believe that they really at heart absolutely believe that no one can do it but them.
Yes.
And that is why they will take any measure.
Yeah, and they'll tell Congress that, and Congress will believe them, and they'll get their funding.
Because they're the experts, because they went to their... You know, grandfathers went to the moon 40 years ago, whatever. You know. And the proof is, of course, that no one's done it since. So that's why nobody else can do it. You know, that is very discouraging, obviously.
Until someone ends up doing it.
Well, you know, I'm still waiting for Elon to stick somebody in one of those cargo resupply flights.
You should volunteer, Charles.
I'll wait until the F9R, as it's now designated, has flown a few times. Then I'll volunteer.
Well, you're chicken. You didn't read my book, apparently.
What do you mean?
Safe is not an option.
I want a little demonstration, Rand. After all,
they've demonstrated. You would have come back safely on every single Dragon flight to date.
Yes, but they are. I'm talking about the boosters. The fact that the booster
doesn't matter. They all went up on boosters,
and they all came back.
They all came back safely.
Charles, you would not have perished.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the.
Your whim.
Changes that are being made to the booster. I'm not calling for a million different trials, but, you know, I'm a
worried about the Falcon 9 1.1 or whatever.
So, Rand, you've evolved from calling him an Eeyore to a wimp now? Is that what I heard you just do?
Well, they're variations on the same theme.
Thank you so much, and I can always count on you.
Yeah, I'm not calling you a new name. I'm just saying it's the same thing.
Or erasing my already demolished ego, as David knows.
Sorry, Charles. I just don't. Your ego is not that elevatable.
That's true.
So I don't worry about that much about it, you know.
Well,
you.
Anyway, let's get back on focus for the program, because we're
way over time.
Yeah, we're way over time. So, Charles, do you want to wind it up, or do you have anything concluding to say? Otherwise, I'm going to turn to Bill and Rand to
Not really. I'll let them
conclude.
Conclude, and you can tell Bill all about me so that he doesn't offline. So that, you know,
well, Bill read Winnie the Pooh, so he knows who Eeyore is.
No, come on.
Well, it was nice meeting you.
All right. Hello.
Thank you, Charles. I'll talk to you later. Guys, this is kind of a strange Evola Terra ceremony tonight. It was a unique one.
To do it Saturday.
Any concluding comments, or how do you want to leave it for the listeners today? Bill, you want to go first?
Yeah, I would just highly recommend that people download it and do it. Even if it's just two of you, but better with four or six, and it's a good excuse for a party. And
yep.
I might mention that there's plenty of toasts, so have lots of wine.
Plenty of good wine to go around.
It's a Saturday night.
Yeah, really, do it, folks, and then let us know. Write in and let us know what you think. Love to hear it from you.
Yeah, because we never do.
Yeah, we have an open line show on Tuesday, July 30th. So if you do it, make sure you call in or email in and give us your feedback.
Yeah, but please, you know, we never get any feedback at the website.
I know.
If you please do it and tell us about it.
And your thoughts, and call us on open lines, and yeah, I'll make the phones available for you.
Because we're very depressed after, about 30 years after we started doing this, that, people just don't do it. Or if they do, they do it and don't tell us about it, which I'm not sure which is worse.
Well, I don't know either. Rand, do you have anything concluding?
I think I just did.
Okay.
Do it.
Okay, and if you want to see Rand's book and get an autographed copy, New Space Conference in San Jose at the DoubleTree Inn. It's across from the San Jose Airport. It is next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, a week after this week.
Yeah, if I don't have actual copies at the conference, which is a possibility, because I'm still kind of late. I mean, we're ready to print it, but I'm behind on all the mechanics of making that happen. I will still, give me your name and address there, and give me money, and I will send you a book or a signed copy.
There'll be a way to make it happen.
Yep.
All right, guys, thank you very much. Appreciate talking to you both. And again, everybody, do the ceremony Saturday night, and we want to get your feedback, please. And again, thank you guys for writing it. You did have another author who wrote it. Do you want to give a shout out to Margaret?
Oh, you mean Volaterra? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the book. Yeah, Margaret Jordan, who we haven't actually talked to about this show. We could have had her on. But
well, next year, why don't we see if she's available
and
she can join us?
That was great last year when we actually read the ceremony on the air, which is available on podcast. Give me a little
text. Absolutely. And in fact, I'll put that URL in the archives so that they'll know where that one is, where we read the ceremony.
Yep.
All right. Guys, thanks a lot, and we'll be in touch. And Rand, I'll probably see you at New Space.
Probably.
Listeners, that's it for tonight. And our next show is Friday morning, and look forward to talking to you for that one. We're going to be talking about the SmallSat Conference with Dr. Patterson at Utah State University in Logan, Utah. Good night, everybody, from the Space Show.